Welcome to the Typical Life Coach Podcast, Rachana Kashyap. It's you, it's me, it's Natalie. Natalie, welcome to the podcast. I'm John Strasser. You are?
I'm Natalie Strasser.
Natalie Strasser, and we're coming together. This is our second week now of doing our podcast, not just audio, also video, up on our YouTube channel. What's it called?
Insight Coaching Community.
It's Insight Coaching Community. That was not a test. I literally forgot in that moment. Want to make sure we all speak loudly here. So Rachana, you know, you've done an amazing job since you've joined our community. You're a professional life coach. We are featuring you in some of our latest video content that we're uploading to YouTube, that call where you coach Mark. The level of presence that you exhibit, and really, I think, how you embody all of the insight coaching guiding principles, which are centered, in my view, in presence. You know, it's really, it's a technology or a way of being, especially a way of being present that leads to much deeper, much more transformative coaching experiences for their clients. So the other day, you and I connected a little bit. This is how we'll start, I think. And you have been on such a deep, a spiritual awakening around just how powerful and valuable being totally present to another human being can be, and how the answers are within, you know, rather than us as coaches trying to, you know, offer our answers. So let us know to start, because we'll interview you a bit, and I think maybe you'll interview us a bit, and we'll kind of see where this goes. But just let us know. Where are you in the world, and where in your business are you, and then where do you want to be? So where are you in the world?
Yeah. Thank you for all that kind words, first of all. I am in Santa Clara in California. Where am I in my coaching? I'm really in it, totally in it. The focus has been so far becoming the best coach in the world. How do I be so good that the people that I coach get the best out of a coaching session, time with me, and best out of their life, really? And I think that the core truth for me, and what I believe, is that every person has infinite possibilities, infinite potential that sometimes they don't see. And maybe earlier on, you know, before I get to know a person, I don't see either. But in a coaching session, through just being present and empty, that's what you teach in ICC. It's like, I see through them. I see what is possible for them. And when I see it and I share what I see and show what's possible for them, they're like, oh yeah, there's so much I could create. There's so much that I'm holding myself back on. And just seeing that is amazing, John. And what you teach here is the first guiding principle, being empty and being present, allows us to have the space, slow down, and see what is. What is? That's it. And I think it works both ways, in that the client is able to see what is, and I am able to see what is. And I, through the coaching, I reflect what I see. I become like a mirror, and we slow down, and there's so much clarity. And once there's clarity, and you have an insight, everything's different. Like, nothing's changed, but everything's different. You know, you say that all the time. It's powerful. Coaching is just powerful. And yeah, that's what I've been focusing on, becoming the best client in the world. And where I want to be is exactly that, the best client in the world. That's it. Forget about clients, making money, and everything. Just be so amazing that people would love to work with me and be in my presence and receive my coaching.
Yeah, so that's so good. You want to be the best coach in the world. Where you're at, you're in it, and you really are in it. And your goal is to be the best coach in the world. And that's a great goal. It's a different goal. Sometimes goals are in coaching. You know, I want to make this much money. I want to have this many clients. Are you familiar, Rachana, with Mr. Beast?
Yeah. The YouTuber.
Yeah, the YouTuber. I mean, he's by far the most successful YouTuber in history. I mean, by far. And his goals are that kind of goal. He just wants to be better. He wants to make videos better. He doesn't want to make a certain amount of money or anything like that. It's just always about improvement. Natalie, from what Rachana so beautifully shared just then, as she was talking about her business and you were, you know, just being with you right here, really entrenched on what she was saying, what, like, I just want to hear, like, what were you getting from that?
It's so lovely to listen to her talk, first of all, to listen to you talk, Rachana. You have such a, just a naturally calming presence. And I can see why your clients are able to be completely present with you, because you allow that just by how you're showing up, how you're being. And I could really feel that just from listening to you talk about it. And I loved how you said that you just want to be in a place where your clients want to receive your coaching, you know, and just, it's not about anything else except for being right where you are and doing right what you're doing. And I think that's just beautiful. It's awesome.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. I don't know
you're
what else
welcome.
Yeah, it's good. You're doing great. You know, Rachana came to us originally. She was a long-term client of Dylan.
Oh, okay.
So she's only had, actually, you let me know. I think you've essentially only had really great coaching since you've been exposed to like true professional coaching. Is that correct?
Yes. The only kind of coaching I've experienced is the ICC way. And I've transformed my life completely. Like from the time I started working with my coach, with Dylan, and until now. And I've seen the power of it. And I think I was already wanting to be a life coach even before that. But seeing that transformation, seeing what is possible through it, made me want to do it even more and help people get that, get what. What I received through coaching, I want to give that to other people.
Yeah. You know, interesting. God, I'm not feeling that great today. One of the characteristics in our Accelerate program, there's a point where I talk about the importance for coaches of being coached. And we've had people who have been through our Accelerate program, then ended up joining the larger community say, yeah, you know, when you, John, talked about me as a coach needing to get coached and then sharing with me that they really hadn't been coached much, it brought that to the forefront of my consciousness more. Just how many coaches out there are pursuing coaching, are coaches, but aren't getting coached.
Yeah.
And you've come into coaching. You joined us after or amid getting coached, and you've been coached a ton before joining and then since joining. So what would you say to someone who is a little bit earlier on and is like, man, what they're talking about makes sense. I'm really not getting coached that much. Like, what would you share to encourage them?
Yeah, that's such a great point. I think it is important to be coached or work on yourself, you know, for many reasons. One, you know, we hear this in the community all the time. You can only take your client as far as you've been yourself. So if you're telling stories to yourself as to why you cannot do something, or if you have limiting beliefs around what you're capable of, how much money you can make, or you know, all these kind of stories that we just tell ourselves all the time. If you're there, how will you be able to see through a story that your client is saying? You just can't. And then you believe them because you believe them yourself.
Yeah.
And that's not what they need to hear. So I absolutely think that it's very important to be coached and be working on yourself earlier on in your journey, and actually throughout. And I believe this. I was sharing this with someone else the other day. Coaching forces me to level up, you know, because I can't be sitting down sulking that things are not going the way that I am, and then next moment I'm telling people that I coach to not sulk and be where you are and get up and take action anyway. It's like, I got to do what I preach. So I have to step up. I have to level up. It forces me to keep leveling up. So it happens throughout the journey, but especially in the beginning, because I feel like when your mindset is a little, you're operating on a higher conscious level, your coaching is powerful automatically. And I think it's really important to work on yourself, be coached, and even more importantly, know the power of coaching. You know, I would ask these people, if you think coaching is so good, how come you don't have a coach? Or how come you've never been coached?
Yeah. I've always said, gosh, I mean, that was strong how you said that. And then you have such a wonderful way about you that you're able to be honest in a non-threatening, just purely clear kind of way. Mm-hmm. You know, my energy can be real strong sometimes. It just lands
just different. A little.
Just a little, yeah. Yeah, but you know, I always say you can't expect to create invested clients until you invest yourself. You know, it's like all these coaches out there that are unwilling to invest, scared to really go all in and get committed for some reason or another, some story that's showing up, and then hoping for the clients who are going through the same thing. You know, they're not really sure. What if I do this? What if I do this? What if I sign up with this coach and it doesn't work? What if I don't do the work? What if I can't stay committed? What if I'm not enough? What if I'm not good at being coached? All these kinds of things. It's like, you've got to step through that. They've got to step through that. And we as coaches, we have to step through that ourselves. So Rachana, what's one, you know, you mentioned basically like you can't take your clients deeper than you've been yourself. And in order for you to expect your clients to level up and to step through their stories, you've got to do the same. So when you think about people you've coached, what's one story of theirs that is a limiting belief or a limiting story that you consistently see? You got something real clear, huh?
Yeah. This is so common. And I see this with so many people that I coach. People are always waiting to make the perfect decision over something. It might be an important decision. For example, choosing which career that you want to go for, or if you want to, you're trying to change careers, like what's the best career for me, you know, but waiting to find the perfect solution or perfect time also to start doing that. You know, I'll wait for things to settle down here and then I'm gonna, I see it so much. I guess it's a little bit of perfectionism. I'm curious, John and Natalie, what's been your experience with that? Like just waiting for things to be perfect and also waiting to find the perfect solution before moving forward with something.
Yeah, it's good. And you mean what's our experience in terms of ourselves? Yeah.
And yourselves and all people that you've been with, coached, all of that.
Well, it's funny. So as you were speaking, what came to my mind was I literally at some point on this podcast, I want to turn to you, Rachana, and be like, this is your podcast now. And I literally want you to be like, welcome to the Rachana podcast. Right. And then you turn on us and then you turn to us and hit us with a question. Yeah.
So I would totally listen to the Rachana.
What do you think, Natalie?
For me,
waiting for conditions to be perfect.
Oh, I still do it. I mean, I didn't realize that was a thing, a human condition, until I met John and started working in the coaching industry. And but now that I am aware of that, I see it in myself a lot, all the time. I'm better at because I catch it when I'm doing it. But yeah, I mean, it's still very much something that I catch myself doing a lot. What about you?
Yeah. It's constant. I mean, I'm better and better, and there's things that even this, you know, moving the podcast from audio to video, and just we're starting to do a lot more significant social media things that businesses at our level need to be doing. And it's like, well, once I'm not busy, then I'll do it. I mean, that's one of the biggest, you know, stories, excuses, objections for people potentially signing up for coaching is that, you know, at some point in the future, especially when one's not as busy,
right,
you know, or time wise, the timing is going to be better, and it's never better. And the longer you wait, the harder it is. I mean, imagine if anything that we had ever waited for, we had started when we first had the idea, we'd be a lot further along and we would have figured it out.
Yeah.
Now, Rachana, me and this one, you know, we met, we got engaged very quickly. We moved in, we got pregnant. I mean, we haven't even known each other 4 years. We have a 2 and a almost half-year-old daughter. Living essentially our dream life in the mountains. Like we
shoved a lot of relationship into a very short amount of time.
Well, that, yeah.
But
yeah, making it very challenging, but we, cause that's it. I mean, the less, this is what's coming up for me right now. You tell me what you think, Racha. I'll take back over. We'll just go back and forth. Be podcast wars, typical life coach podcast versus Racha in a podcast. It's like, the less you wait to live the life you want, the more challenging it is, in the sense that there's a lot required. There's leveling up, there's action, there's fears, there's ups, there's downs.
And it gets scarier.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It gets scarier, but then it gets less scary. But then you keep taking on new challenges. You keep leveling up. Like you said, Rachana, pursuing coaching, that's the ultimate leveling up. You have to. And if you don't level up, no one else will. You know, if you don't believe you're worth it, no one else will. If, you know, if you don't become amazing and get really committed to this, your goal is to become the best in the world at coaching, and you're on your way. I mean, it's so evident. God, it's so cool. You know, if you don't do that, then no one's going to see that in you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. There's something else coming to me from what you were sharing earlier, John. About waiting for things to be perfect, right? Yeah. I think the biggest problem with waiting, like one of the biggest problems with waiting, is you hate it, actually. You hate waiting. You say that so you can postpone taking action, but you actually hate being there because it's frustrating to be exactly where you are and not move an inch, like be stuck, you know, be, you know, when you say that, this is what I want to do, but I'll wait for a while when things clear up. And then as days go and you realize you're making excuses to not do it, you get frustrated with yourself, with the situation, and you hate being there and you want to move forward. So essentially, why are you doing this to yourself is what I would ask.
Yeah.
Be it going to the gym or starting a new business or taking a leap and changing careers. Whatever that is for you, like if you really want to do it and you hate being where you are, why would you not do it?
Yeah. Why do you think, Nana?
Because I'm comfortable there in my past, you know, like, and even sometimes now, if there's something for me, I'm the person that takes in all of the knowledge and all of the information, and I read all of the books and take all of the classes and watch all of the videos before I'll actually jump in and do something. For instance, like my vegetable garden, I'm really planning this vegetable garden and I know everything that I need to know. But the one thing I haven't done is put the seeds in the ground and plant the garden and like start to make the mistakes and start to, you know, because that's where I'm comfortable. Yeah. And I think stepping outside of our comfort zone to do something scary, to do that next thing, even though it's what we desperately want, is so hard for us because we're comfortable there. We're comfortable in limbo. Would you agree?
Yeah. We're safe. We're conditioned.
We're safe.
Yeah. We have a mind that has been developed over, you know, through genetic revolution, what is it, like since the beginning of time, basically to keep us
through evolution
to keep us really safe. So when we feel safe, we want to stay safe. And then we have an ego that tells us things that are not true. And that is that if I do this thing and it doesn't work, that I'm not worth it, I'm not worthy, I failed, people will look at me differently. And it's all made up. You know, the reality is nobody cares. You know, if you look at yourself, like when I can think about what everyone's going to think if my life fails, right? And I can think that and focus on that, and that can keep me from trying to win, basically, and for playing really small and playing really safe, which the world is at large just playing safe. The world is not doing what they really want to be doing and just watching the very, very tiny percentage of the world actually doing what they want to be doing, especially via social media. Mm-hmm. But if I stop and think about, do I care at all for 1 second about anyone I know and whether or not they fail? I don't. I mean, I'm way too busy thinking about myself, yet I lie to myself and say, oh, it matters that much. And that's the thing. I mean, I think the biggest thing, Rachana, like as far as this waiting for conditions to be perfect, is people, and myself included, people's propensity to like have everything figured out perfectly, you know, like before I really move forward, I need to have everything in order, make sure I understand everything, conditions are perfect, and it becomes this thing where you never do it. And then there's a phenomenon that kicks in that I've learned. It was from one of my first coaching clients, actually. This guy, he's a world-class musician. I mean, this dude is, you know who it is, as good as one could be, as talented as one could be. And when he would, musician and creator of music, I don't know if that's the same thing, but when he would make music, Rachana, this guy, instead of spending a day or two on finishing the final edits and putting it out in the world, he'd spend like a month or two and he'd make it as perfect as you couldn't even imagine. Nothing could be even more perfect. Like only the most sensitive ears would know that it couldn't be any more perfect. And he identified in the coaching that we did that he thought that in making it so perfect, that would give him the courage to put it out in the world. But it was actually the opposite. The longer he spent making it perfect, the harder and the scarier it was to put it out there. And that's really what it is. And that's the coaching industry. The coaching industry says, you want to become a coach? Great. Here's 58 things you have to do first. Spend a year doing them. Then you're going to coach. And you're like, yeah, I'll do it, because it's safe. It doesn't have you actually talking to people. It doesn't have you actually coaching. And then when you finally go to coach, you've done all these things, you've set up your Instagram and everything else, you come to find that stuff doesn't really work, doesn't get you coaching, and you inevitably don't coach, and you think it was the system. It was the system to an extent, but really it was you who didn't do it. And that's why you, Rachana, I mean, you just have dived into coaching. And as soon as you started pursuing coaching after being coached or being coached, you started crushing. Because you started doing it. Yeah. It's crazy. Exactly. How many hours have you coached in the, you know, your, let's say, in, when you think back over your first year of coaching, how many hours?
I think I've hit 200.
Yeah. No. I mean, that's, 200.
That's incredible.
Yeah. It's unheard of. 200.
Yeah.
200.
It's not unheard of.
In our world, it's not, but in the
overall,
yeah. Oh man. I mean, we've just, you know, we've had more than 3,000 coaches join Accelerate, and countless coaches have been at it for years. I mean, many trainings, multiple certifications, they've never coached 200 hours.
Yeah. It's scary.
Yeah.
It is scary. There's something coming to me right now as you talk about people, why people wait and until the conditions are perfect. Also relating to my story a little bit, they're scared to fail, and not just fail, it's fail publicly. Like fear of what people think, right? That's one. And there's also that there's a the idea of apparently if there is a fall, like you I don't like to use the word failure, because you will be having some falls every day, every other week, all the time. And people think that the moment that happens, that is failure and that is the end of it. But what actually is that you just realize what doesn't work or that there's something that needs to change. And then the only way to find out is to fall, you know, and then incrementally, yeah. I mean, the only thing is just be open and ask the question, what am I learning from this? And what can I do differently? And then make those changes and keep doing it until you fall again. And you will do it pretty much for the rest of your life. But how far can you get from keep falling and learning and improvising yourself and leveling up? Where will you be if you keep doing that for a year in whatever you do?
That's so good. Yeah. I mean, I'd call it like, it's not failure. It's feedback. We lower level awareness, look at it as failure. It didn't work. I mean, the call today that we were on, Rachana, we were looking at in what ways when we reach out to someone and offer them the gift of our coaching, when they're not interested, in what ways does that actually work? You think, oh, it didn't work. Didn't work. They weren't interested, but wow, it worked because I'm doing it anyways. I'm building commitment. I'm building consistency. I'm spreading love. I'm learning how to build out systems. I'm letting people know that I'm a professional coach just by saying, hey, would you know anyone interested in coaching? I mean, there's a million ways to look at it. And in our business, Natalie, I mean, how many over the years since we've been together and you've been in this business, just think of like all the you know, seeming failures, but feedback we've gotten. How many things have not worked for us? It's crazy.
Countless.
More than has worked.
And at the beginning, it bothered me, you know, when we would get a message back from somebody like, you know, why are you reaching out to? Or I took it so personally and it was like, oh my gosh. And then you build that muscle over time of just doing it as part of your system. And, you know, it's like some seeds are going to grow and some aren't. And then next season you just do something different and figure it out, you know?
And and you become unstoppable as a result. You become a spiritual gangster because you're not so concerned about this, and this on the coaching journey or the personal development journey. And then when the neighbor frustrates you or the, you know, grocery store closes early or the restaurant doesn't have the special or whatever, just anything that may have affected your ability to be present and in fully engaged with life, like it doesn't affect you the same way.
Mm-mm.
And you become that. That's what this is. This is just pursuing coaching. All it is just a facade. It's a path to much greater awareness and spiritual empowerment. It's a spiritual journey that we get on.
And people are always scared of the worst case scenario. What's the worst thing that could happen? Maybe the worst thing is that you just realize that you don't care about this and you don't want to be this, or you don't want to do this, or you don't want to plant this seed and grow this garden. You want to do something else. You know, like at least that's clear, and there's no way to get that clarity beforehand, before doing any action. That's the worst case scenario, right? You learn something about yourself.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, and so I want to shift just for a second because I was thinking about spiritual development and spirituality. So you're originally from India, Rachana. You're going back to India. You had mentioned to me the other day for a month, you said?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going back home visiting for 4 weeks.
And where are you from in India?
From Bangalore, which is in South
India. That's right. And what are you going to do?
Everything. Just be home, be with family, eat good food, meet everyone that I've not met in over a year. Like, I know so many people there. One of my best friend's wedding. That's one of the main reasons I'm going, actually.
Okay.
So I'll be around helping out, having a blast. Yeah, that's it. And coach, you know, it's not completely vacation because I will be still looking for opportunities to meet people, connect back, and offer coaching sessions to people there. That's it. That's my plan.
Wow. Good for you. You know, I always say you can't, don't take a vacation from this vocation, in the sense that there's always opportunity to connect. There's always opportunity to let people know we're coaching, and that even if we're literally on vacation, we can be moving the business forward. And the business is us. You know, the business is who I am and how am I getting interested in people? How am I continuing to let more and more people know that I'm someone who could potentially help? Yeah. Good
when,
for you.
When was the last time you were home?
Oh, a year and a half ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not and how long ago. Have you lived in California?
7-8 months. I've been moving around the US a lot. I was actually very close to where you guys were living. I was in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Initially in Knoxville, then moved Santa Clara. What's that? It's outside of San Francisco?
Yeah, it's a It is the south of San Francisco. It's called the Bay Area.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, in the Bay Area. Wow. Awesome. I've been to Bangalore, India. What were you going to say?
I was just going to ask you, you've been to India so many times.
Yeah.
And you said 13 times. And
13
times. I know you did a master's in Hindu, Hinduism. I'd love to hear your experiences visiting India and learning all about it. Like, where were you? Where did you even go?
Yeah, so I went to Delhi when I lived in India and studied religion and did some research, academic research. It was in Delhi. So I've been to Delhi many times. And then I would normally go from Delhi to Varanasi to Calcutta. So this was this three-part trip up to the border of Bangladesh. But then I went to Mumbai many times. What's that beach place south of Mumbai?
Goa?
Goa a few times. Then Trivandrum. And I went to Bangalore one time just to see Bangalore. That, where you live, Bangalore, it's more of a like a business area, like a lot of buildings and business kind of happening there, I would say. Is that true?
It's called the Silicon Valley of India. So it's big in tech. That's right. A big city. Lot of startups. It's a startup capital. I don't know of the world, but yeah, it has a lot of startups. Yeah.
So I mostly would traveling to India would go and experience different religious traditions. So I'd go into all kinds of temples, you know, mostly Hindu temples, Sikh Gurdwaras for the lunch deal, Jain temples, Buddhist temples. I go to Christian churches, hit some mosques sometimes.
And you went to the Mother Teresa's place quite a few times, right?
Yeah. So a big part was, so in this coaching business, Rachana, there was a point where I was charging people to take them on this epic spiritual pilgrimage where I would bring you to New Delhi, India, and take you to different religious places there, including Akshardham, you know, which at the time was the largest Hindu temple in the world. And we go to where Gandhi was assassinated and be like near his final footsteps and go to a Sikh Gurdwara and have, you know, help serve lunch basically and then eat. And there were, you know, thousands of people. That's at, Gurdwara Bangla Sahib in New Delhi.
Wow. I don't know really much of this stuff.
Yeah, and then we take an overnight train from Delhi to Varanasi, which is the oldest city in the world. Go to see this yoga master guy and be along the Ganges River for like the nightly arti or fire ceremony on the river. Stay there a couple of days. Then we take a flight from Varanasi to
Calcutta,
and the finale was volunteering at Mother Teresa's Missionaries of Charity with her nuns. And then at the Missionaries of Charity, at the original, there's a few different ones in Calcutta. Her body is enshrined in a tomb there. So you're in the, it's starting to get some chills here. It's so incredible. I mean, one of the most extraordinary experiences you could even imagine. When you're in the little area where the nuns are at, and it's like this orientation experience, and the nuns are, they're wearing the same garbs that she wore. I mean, it's the particular, the Missionaries of Charity.
The white and the blue.
Yeah, exactly what she wore. I mean, so they look like her in a sense. And then in this other room is this tiny little chapel, and there's her big marbled casket, you know, shrine thing, and you'd kneel down and pray to Mother Teresa, and they drop, you know, a lot of the Hinduism is the Christianity is influenced by Hinduism. So the flowers that you would offer at puja are like offered on top of her shrine. And man, there's this huge sense of like mother, you know, she's mother. And like all these volunteers, as well as all these nuns who have dedicated their life to doing the work, which is helping people in different ways. But in the main Missionaries of Charity, which is the first one she started, it's the home for the sick and dying. So she used to walk the streets of Calcutta and she would find people dying on the street. She would bring them in and then they would allow them to die in the facility. In fact, when I was there with Matthew and a couple other people, we were volunteering and then a guy was brought in and he died right in front of us. Wow. And we helped like put a sheet on him and pray for him and stuff.
Gosh.
Yeah, it really gives really you
a, powerful.
Yeah. Just a moving experience. But that came as an opportunity. I saw I need to make some money in this business. And I've got this unique skill set that I
traveling through India apparently is not easy from what I've heard from John.
Not easy. And I know how to do it in a way that is really, because this would be a feet to the ground. You know how it is, Rachan, in India, like the tourists come and it's usually a tourist bus with a tourist car and a tourist tour guide. And like everybody knows they're tourists and stuff. Our experience, what I created would be none of that. You know, we go on an overnight train and we'd be sleeping on the train amid all the Indians who are just traveling to Varanasi or whatever. We'd be on the Indian inexpensive flight. And it was like all of us and just straight Indians are like, what are you guys doing here? We're like, we're going to Calcutta. They're like, why are you going? Who are you people? So it'd be, you know, just all day going into different temples and stuff that if you're on your own or with some kind of tourist group, if you did get to go in, it would be, you know, just a different experience, you know, yeah. All, like annoying to me. I don't like people explaining things. I want to like.
And you told me several stories about how people are just so kind.
Oh, yeah.
And random strangers on the street would like invite you to come to lunch in their home. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, and that happened like all the time, like no big deal.
Yeah. I mean, so Racha, I mean, in my experience in India, Indians, you know, without like generalizing too much, but it can be some of the most open, loving, kind, inviting. I mean, I was invited to a wedding because we were walking by, you know, how it is, right, Rachna, like extended weddings for days on end. It was one of the days and they were had music and all this was going on and we're looking and kind of like waving and they're like, come up here. And, you know, this is day 7 of the wedding or whatever it was. And then they're like, tomorrow night, if you want, you can come. Invited all day long to eat with people, go to people's homes. Brand strangers. I mean, I've got a video, Rach, you know, where I'm in the street and a guy sees me driving and he pulls over and he's like, where are you from? You know, I'm like, I'm from America, you know, and we're talking and stuff. And then he's like, I want you to come to my house, have dinner with my family, you know, cause I'm interested. Like, yeah. I always want to understand, like, just, you know how it is. Well, you're there, Rach, and actually for me coming from the outside, it's been this journey of like understanding what's happening, you know, like let's say the driving, like people that don't know, they'll say, oh, there's no laws in India. It's crazy. It's madness and stuff. But actually once you, at least for me, maybe there's, you know, a 3-lane road and 8 different lanes going and all this kinds of stuff. But it's not madness. It's the opposite. There's like this beautiful symmetry,
controlled chaos.
It is like, there's more happening, but if you just see it, you think, oh, there's horns honking and it's scary. And oh, how could you drive in this? But actually, no, there's a beautiful, perfect system, you know, and same with all of India. You know, like even the temple, you know, the people are walking in and out, ringing bells and offering milk and all, you know. And it's like, what is this? It looks, if you are unenlightened, uneducated, it looks confusing for sure. But there's so much to it. There's like a precise reason for every single thing that's happening.
They've been doing it for thousands and thousands.
Would you agree, Rachan? I mean, you're Indian. You're from there. How do you see that? What do you get? What are you thinking right now?
I'm just thinking, yeah, it's different in India. People that are, they just love to love is how I like to put it. They love to love. They love to show people. they love to give. And there's this saying, I don't know, it's not a saying, it's a Sanskrit mantra, Atithi Devo Bhava. It means guests are like God, you know, like, so there's some amount of spirituality here that people really appreciate and love and see the divine in other people. So that's why they're like, come in, you're part of us, you and me are the same, you know, you're not different and we're family. And that's probably one, that's why one experience of yours was being invited to weddings or home for lunch, you know. It's people just love to be together and give a lot and celebrate together. It's very close-knit, you know. When every time I visit India, my heart is always full. Like, it's full of love. How much love I receive from everyone there, and how much I'm able to give as well. It's just, it's I don't feel that anywhere else. I don't know what else to say, honestly. It's the spirituality that has been in India for thousands and thousands of years, like way beyond thousands of years, maybe even 10,000s of years. They just consider everyone like God. Atithi Devo Bhava means everyone, like a guest, everyone is God. Parents are God, children are God, grandparents, guests, everyone. So they just love to get together and show that love to each other. That's what I think it's all about.
That's so good.
It's so beautiful.
You went back to India so many times, John. What was it about India that made you go there 13 times? I'm curious.
Yeah. Two things. First of all, it's always felt like there's some much deeper reason that I'm called to go and be in India, as if in a previous life I was there. You know, there's some sense of being home. But it also, more than that, I've always felt so free to be me there. Mm-hmm. It feels like it's a less limiting culture there. And it's also very crowded, which mm-hmm. tends to help you almost like when you go to New York, you just
right. you can get lost.
Nobody's paying attention to you.
Right.
But yeah, there's just such I'm so drawn. I'm going back. I mean, it was when you know, COVID hit, we met, then Natalie got pregnant. Now with a kid, I'm not going anywhere anytime soon. But when the kids are older, I mean, just the other day, actually, I thought about being much older and like living in India for a long period of time, maybe like dying in India or something, or being in India.
What about me?
Yeah, all of us. I got to convince you, but I got to take her to go. Bring her somewhere real nice and less like intense. Natalie's very sensitive.
I'm very sensitive to the crowds and the
stimulation.
I would need
very more of, sensitive
like, a rural
Trivandrum or something. You've been to Trivandrum down south, right?
I have visited when I was much younger. Yeah.
Not as crowded, you know, just different than North India, than Delhi and Mumbai and stuff. It's so fun. I mean, and it's challenging. It's not like, to me, Rachana, it's not somewhere to go on vacation. I mean, it's not a vacation. Like, here's what happens. I land at the airport. For whatever reason, all planes, every single plane I've ever took lands in the middle of the night. Like, it's like, if you're coming in some kind of, you know, you're coming from wherever, it would be New York to, you know, Abu Dhabi to Delhi or wherever. They land in the middle of the night. And then as soon as, listen, Rachana, the moment I walk out of the terminal into the taxi area, and it's before then, they're in the baggage area. There's the guys that want me to take their taxi are on me. I mean, they are on me, the touts. They're trying to get me. I mean, there's eight of them around me. Sir, take my taxi. You know, and I'm just like, and I'm getting a prepaid taxi. I already know what I'm doing. I'm not taking their taxi. And then it's like, and then the guy, the prepaid taxi guy. He's saying, do you know what hotel you're staying in? He wants to take me to his hotel, you know? And I'm like, I know where I'm staying. This is where we're going. Just go to the address, you know? And man, it's just, it's an adventure. It's not easy. I have the best time, Rancho. I just go to a neighborhood. Just stay in a neighborhood, you know, as opposed to like a big hotel in some hotel area, but be in a neighborhood and then just wake up in the morning, jet lag, the sounds, the smells, the incense begins to be burned. The temple priest is opening up the tiny little temple on the corner for the neighborhood. He's starting to ring the bell. The dogs are waking up. They're laying on top of cars. People are, you know, the rickshaw drivers, they've been, they're Sikhs and they're living in their little taxi hut and they're like waking up and washing their hands from, it's amazing. There's no separation.
You like, light up when you talk about it.
We got to go like soon. Forget the kids. Listen, Rachna, when you come back, will you watch our, I guess we have one kid right now, soon another?
Yeah.
I'm ready to go, man.
All right. We'll give you Savannah for a month.
Done. I'm game. Give it. I love babies in general. And Savannah, I've seen pictures. She's adorable. I would love to have her.
Oh, yeah.
Go for weeks. I'll be here taking care of her.
I'm going to hold you to that.
Yeah. What were you going to say?
I was going to say it's very different everywhere in India. That's the beauty of India. It's very diverse. And Delhi is very different from, say, Mumbai or Calcutta or Bangalore or Kerala. You can have the experience you want. You just choose it, is what I would say about India. Like, you can have it slow and full of nature and not the hustle bustle. Like, you know, Delhi sounds like what you were describing. It's just a lot of things going on. It's a big metro city, a lot of people there. You can, and there's also northeastern India, which is also so, it's untouched. It's unexplored. It's not commercialized, but very, very beautiful. I haven't been, but I've heard amazing things about it. But India has everything, like all the landscapes, all the different kind of experiences, slowed down, spiritual, even nightlives, or whatever you want. Like, it has it. It just, you just have to choose what you want. And what I think is amazing is that it's so different that literally, if the cultures are so different, there's different cultures, religions, dialects, you know, if I go 3 hours driving south from Bangalore, it's a completely different language.
Yeah.
Sometimes even religion, the way, like, this culture, everything is different. And it's like very interesting, you know. The reason everybody lives, coexists so beautifully, you know, given how diverse it is from east to west, north to south, is like thousands of different kind of dialects and religions and cultures, because they love. And I think it's the only place in the world that is that diverse and people live harmoniously.
Well, it's so beautiful. And I want to bring it full circle from what you said, that essentially India is a place that has every possible flavor of what you would want to experience. And then you said you just have to choose. And that's what life is. And that's really what life coaching is. Whatever we want to create for our life, we can start creating it. The challenge, though, for most people is their inability to choose. All they have to do is choose. Just like when we engaged a little bit before the podcast, Rachna, and we talked about people's propensity to not be sure about which career they want to pursue or what they really want to do with their life. And we were saying, actually, they do know. Everyone knows. They just have to choose. They don't need, you know, months and months of figuring it all out. They already know. That's the value in high-level coaching. What is it that you think you don't know that you actually know? And now that you know what you do know, what do you choose? And can you choose what you truly want with my help, the help of a professional coach? Rachna, thanks so much for being here. If anybody is vibing with you and wants to reach out to connect with you, what's the single one easiest way for them to reach you?
Facebook. Find my name, Rachna Kashyap, and make sure it's the one living in Santa Clara.
That's it. Spell it out for us.
My name, it's Rachna, and Kashyap, Kashyap. Yeah, you probably see a lot more Rachna Kashyaps, but you know, if you're watching the video, you know what I look like. So
we'll put the link in the podcast notes too.
Yes. Yeah. Let's do that. Yeah. Thank you so much for being here. Thanks so much, Natalie. This was great.